really blue, 'cause I can't see you.
This is Richie Wexler of Vintage Annals Archive. I'm happy to announce that this is a new series we started called Building Momentum, MOO-MENTUM, a very unofficial How to Dance in Ohio podcast. For you, for those who don't know what How to Dance in Ohio is, it was a documentary made by Alexander Shiva about essentially a social skills program teaching young adults how to prepare for a dance. That then got turned into a musical that was in Syracuse running for about a year, if I'm not mistaken, and then it came to Broadway. Unfortunately, it is now over, but I know something next, whatever happens next is going to be amazing. This was such a groundbreaking process in terms of accessibility. I mean, there was an entire accessibility team that made sure everybody felt at home in terms of rehearsing everything they needed to be their best. And everyone involved got that treatment. You know, I'm very sad this is over, but I have to also celebrate the fact that this changed lots of lives. It changed my life. Before this time, I would identify as neurodivergent or on the spectrum, and I was afraid to identify as autistic because of just stigma and this and that. And this really gave me the bravery to do that, of just how real people were that I got involved with, that I got to talk to. We have about 13 interviews now. We're going to hopefully add some. I really have to thank, before I start, Sammy Canold, the director, really went out of their way to help me out with this process. I also have to really thank Ray Esposito, again, was a really big help in negotiating this world. I had not really done much press on an active musical, and I needed a lot to learn, and those two parties were very helpful. And also, Arthur Castro, my editor, really stepped it up. We, you know, once we found out the show was closing, I wanted to push all this out so that way people knew the story. We've got about 13 interviews with cast members, access team, the director. We're going to be speaking soon with Dr. Amigo, a wonderful man who started all this. And also Alexander Shiva, who directed the documentary. And hopefully I'm going to keep adding people as this thing keeps having life. So please share. These are longer form interviews. I didn't do a lot of extra editing. I wanted this to be very real and authentic, and there's some times that I'm sure I'm not making a lot of sense. Generally, when you're editing and interviewing so much in such a little time, things get a little lost in exhaustion. But I really wanted to honor the people by not changing too much. We did do a little bit of editing, but mostly these are as is. I didn't want to fix anything. I wanted people to be who they were and not really, you know, not change that in any way. So, you know, you're getting a very real, authentic, we're not heavily editing, fixing everyone's like or because I really wanted something real, and I wanted to honor the people I talked to, and I didn't want to change their words in any real way. So thank you so much. Again, this podcast is called Building Momentum, a very unofficial How to Dance in Ohio podcast. I named it that for a few reasons. One, I wanted to kind of cater to younger, like 14, 15-year-old folks that are autistic, to kind of, you know, dig into this, the interviews. And I also didn't want to get sued, so I was very clear that this was not an official thing in any way. Thank you so much. You know, again, we were putting out a few of these at a time. As of the 12th, we will have about 4 or 5 more, and we'll be adding them over the week, and then possibly more. Depending on what happens next with the musical, we will be adding some more. And all I got to say is how well I was treated by everyone involved, how much I admire the cast, the crew, what they've gone through, what they built. I mean, this is one of the most beautiful things. And again, as someone who's autistic myself, as someone who's a special ed teacher, as someone who's loved musical theater since I was a kid, this was just something I really had to really get involved with, and I can't. I'm so proud of what I got to do here, but more that I got to know all the people I got to know. These conversations were some of the most memorable ones I've had. I just want to thank everybody involved. So please, again, share, enjoy. And again, we have 13 episodes, hopefully more, and we'll be posting as we go along. Hello, this is Richie Wexler for Vintage Animals Archive Outsider Podcast, episode 76. This also functions as Building Momentum, a Dance in Ohio, very unauthorized podcast. And that function is episode 9. Really such an honor to have gotten to speak to Rebecca Greer Milochik. I feel like this musical is a rare one that really expresses its generation at the time of the generation, which makes it amazingly current and important piece of work, and also puts it in a category that fits with other musicals like Rent, Chorus Line, Hair, that really define the generations they were part of when they were written. And I think when we look back at history, this musical would be on that list for the 2010s. They were great to talk to, really sweet, really smart. Again, such a pleasure for them. They were the book and lyric writer. They worked with Jacob Yadora, and they created something to me that is a masterpiece. And again, it was so great to talk to someone who was such a big part of the creation of this amazing musical. So enjoy. In terms of writing it, what was that? I mean, was that from the start, from those scenes, or think about those scenes in terms of kind of birthing them?
This process was particularly interesting because it was really iterative. And I think of it like this interpretive feedback loop where when Jacob and I first started working with the documentary material, we made this emotional blueprint, and we took all the moments from the documentary that felt really emotional to us, some that we were like, this feels like it could be a song, like I think I have a lyric idea, or he's like, musically it would sound like this. And then that first draft, the script was mostly lines pulled directly from the documentary,
right?
Because I was like, you know, like I want to like have the voices of real autistic people in these characters. And then we cast our 7 autistic actors in October of 2021, and that's Amelia, Des, Imani, Liam, Ashley, Connor. Who am I forgetting? Oh no! But regardless, but once they stepped into the roles, all of a sudden, you know, we all got really close, and we would just have conversations. And you know, I think I had like one autistic friend. I knew like a couple autistic people before we did this show, and then all of a sudden, I had like a dozen new hilarious, cool autistic friends.
Yeah.
The characters now are really a mixture of the documentary participants and I think the actors that originated the role.
Interesting
because again, like this iterative feedback loop where like I would write something and then Des, who plays Remy, would respond to me like, oh, this is how it made me feel. And then I would go, oh, like, well, what you just told me, like line you said really pings for me. I'm gonna bring that thing that feels good for you. I'm gonna bring that out, and I'm gonna take what you told me, and I'm gonna put that in. And so, again, it wasn't an unusual just like me go into my room and write alone for hours, which there was plenty of that. But the cast and the team and my script consultant Nicole D'Angelo, and like even once we got our tech team, you know, like people on the lighting team who are autistic would be like, hey, I love this lyric, and here's why. And I feel like they also get writing credit. it was so much contribution. Well,
I think women just do better all this stuff, to be honest. It's very clear that you're, because of being female, it's why you have probably people that care about you, and that you're able to form a community of people and way you work and design in a certain way. Because that's a female perspective that men don't have.
Well, Rich, I'm going to say I'll yes and you, but I think that
I mean, I'm
like,
being a little campy, but you get the gist, right?
no. I think that women are like maybe socially programmed more to do that.
Yeah.
And it's funny though, because my writing partner Jacob is like a very like gentle, sensitive person who's a great listener. And so, but it's interesting, like the ways that we are socially conditioned and look, we did have a lot of female leadership on the team.
Yeah.
And, I don't have anything to compare it to really, but I hope that people felt comfortable and they felt like they had leaders who would listen to them and who cared. I do hope that. I think that makes a lot of sense. My partner also works in theater, and we like to talk about how like theater sort of draws in misfits. Like that's
Yeah.
what drew us to theater. We each have our own story about like why we ended up in rehearsals after high school,
Yeah.
instead of some other place. But yeah, I don't know. But it is also I think a lot. I'm a pretty secular person, and I think that the theater also becomes sort of a sacred space for a lot of people. Like whether you're in the audience or on the stage,
Definitely.
and there's certainly like a theater family. And I've been lucky to have like another shows that I've written, like really wonderful theater families as well. And How to Dance in Ohio sort of felt like an amplified version. We spent so many years developing the show together. And then to make it to the big, beautiful Belasco stage,
Yeah.
like it felt like this big family victory that we all did together. So I get that.
You wrote the book and you wrote the music, correct?
I wrote the lyrics. So you can
The
think I wrote
lyrics. Okay. This is
all
where my brain always gets confused. Like, okay. I mean,
the lyrics.
it's simple, but I'm gonna walk others through it because I get thrown by it. So, but then the person who wrote the lyrics is how does it get broken down, I guess? Because
Okay,
that's what
so
throws me off.
I can totally break this down for you.
Yes.
So Jacob Yandura, who's my collaborator,
Okay.
he wrote the music.
He's
So
all the music. Okay.
all the underscore and the melodies and the chords and all that. He
Okay.
wrote all of that. And then I wrote the lyrics. Like he and I are
Okay.
songwriting partners of 13 years. We've known each other for ages. And we always write songs together. And then I wrote the script for this one too. So I don't
Okay.
always write the book for shows, but for this
Right.
one, for this one. And honestly, this one, it made a lot of sense because, there's a lot of interruptions, songs getting interrupted by characters and by book scenes. And so there's kind of a fluidity between the script and the lyrics that I think it was helpful for me to do both in this
Okay.
one. But I always think I wrote all the words. Like I think of it that way. But
Gotcha.
I also have to say, Jacob, the composer, he is really brilliant when it comes to story as well. So we discuss outlines together. We do a lot in the same room. And then I'm always impressed with the way that he underscores a lot of the scenes too.
Gotcha.
I feel like, ours isn't like, here's a song, and then here's a scene, and then here's a song, and here's a scene. The music is often giving you the emotional support underneath the scene. And yeah, he's great with story too.
Why is it that within 2 or 3 minutes of your musical, am I, and this is not to reduce it, and this is not to categorize it, but I feel like I'm watching Rent as written by Sondheim. Did you have that in your mind in creating this at all? Those pieces, those people?
Well, it's funny that you say Rent and Sondheim, because I think I more had come the score of Company in my head, and it's funny, I have to think about like how much interstitial musical material we cut out
Okay.
in the last year. But for me, there's always a little bit more, especially in the hello, how are you? Thanks, I'm fine. Like for me, that's always a little bit of the like Bobby Baby Booby.
Tell me about where this is coming from. Where are you
Well, and
musically?
then Rich, let me ask you a couple questions in response
Oh,
to
yeah.
that. Are you like when you say that you hear Rent, do you mean like the structure of the story in terms of like the
No.
ensemble of beautiful people, or you mean like
I mean, I
literal
wrote.
melody lines?
I said that wrong. I feel Rent and I feel Sondheim through your musical in the best possible way. So it's not even that I hear it, I feel it. There's a sense, there's something in, I mean, I don't know if that has to do with, you creating an ensemble piece. I feel like when you do that well, it's going to always have, a certain vibe of action. You never want to, I think about this as a director. You never want to bring a kid in and have him do like three lines and then that's it. You want to try to, you want to have a play that can But you can have more. You don't get a lot of lead characters in musical theater sometimes.
Well, Rich, I will say it was important to me that every actor in How to Dance in Ohio have a great track that they would love to perform. And yeah. Part of that was because I fell so deeply in love with our entire cast and I just want to make them happy.
Right.
But also I like for future people to perform. I'm you know, like in each of the parent tracks, you know, it's they don't get as much stage time as the group members. But I really wanted to make sure that everybody had something beautiful to sing or like a very impactful emotional scene. And, you know, I've talked with a couple of the actors and, you know, they've expressed that like they've never gotten to do scene work. You know, some of the actors are their parents and they have like these, you know, nice lengthy dramatic scene moments. And, you know, maybe I think the rent feeling you might be getting, I will give that credit to the cast because I think with so many debuts, but also there are so many incredible leaders in our cast. That's the thing I can't quite understand is how with so many new people, how there are so many great leaders amongst our group members.
And I think just,
Yeah, you can tell in interviews. I mean, like, and Rich, I think the reason this show is successful and the reason that people are having such a personal connection to it. I think there's so much joy on stage, and the joy on stage is really a reflection of sort of the joy in the rehearsal room. Yeah. I can certainly say, like, it was a joy to write this show. Like, of course, there are grumbly writer block moments, but every development step of this was wonderful. Every person who came into the orbit of How to Dance in Ohio was a wonderful person. And then on top of that, I don't know. I think that people feel that joy and it's a feedback loop of the rehearsal process. Does that make sense? Like what you're talking about having that new rehearsal.
Believe me, I 100%. Yeah, no. I've told, yes.
You know, so I just want to say as many times on as many podcasts that, you know, it was not to the detriment of the process and make these accommodations. And the accommodations were helpful for every member of the team, regardless of their neurotype. And that, again, it infused the process with like joy and a sense of compassion. Yeah, well, we definitely, first of all, like the artists that we got to work with are super, super talented. And so I think we all worked together and we saw not even just like, you know, noticing what everyone's different strengths are. And you know, like Imani Russell is such a profoundly gifted dramatic actor.
Yeah.
I cannot believe how lucky we are to work with them. And that sort of gave me a challenge of, you know what, I think of myself as someone who writes, you know, poetic lyrics and I like writing comedy. And I thought, well, I'm going to challenge myself to write, you know, some heft, you know, to let Imani shine in those moments. Yeah. So I kind of laughed at Imani about like, you know, Imani was my muse in that sense. And like everybody in this cast sort of inspired me with their talents to challenge myself to support them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think a lot of personal and professional growth in this. And I feel like my professional growth in getting to write for those voices was immense.
What was the moment where like, when did you know this was going to be a musical?
Oh, you know, such an interesting question because my writing partner, Jacob, is the one who found the documentary.
Okay.
And he really spearheaded the genesis of it. He wrote me that night and he had like made a 3-page document. This is what I say, like Jacob doesn't just like say, here's a melody. Like he is like hunting for stories about like deep emotional connection. And that's what the documentary was for him. And so he asked me to watch it right away. And I agreed. But you know, my concern about the show was, you know, that we didn't want it to be a little like cream puff piece of inspiration, which is interesting because that was honestly my biggest fear working on it. And I'm sure you know, like Hal Prince was the original director of the show. And the thing that made me feel like, oh, I can write this, is in our very first meeting, Hal was like, it can't be saccharine. And I know that there's a lot of joy in our show, and it's, you know, it's but, you know, with the very first outline that we did with Hal, he was like, this isn't a sweet show. This is an honest show. And that's actually what I think the show is so affecting, is that, like, you know, you're not saying a joke. Like, you're saying just, it's honest. People, the characters are honest.
The environment you created for them opened that up. It's more than just, I mean, there's some talented people, but having the intelligence to know how to treat people and how to organize them and how to have them work together is the pieces that usually killed all of this.
But that's the honesty part too, right? Like, you can't do honest work as an artist. And the thing I mentioned about that creative feedback loop, like, if the producers and our team hadn't taken such great care to say, like, hey, this is an environment that is meant for all of us, you're welcome here. And then if our autistic artists in turn hadn't said, hey, here's some feedback about how we could feel even more welcome here, you know, like, that honesty going, and then again, like, honesty and character too, of like, hey, I don't think my character would do this. I think my character, you know, might love this instead. Even, you know, when we were building the cosplay references for the character of Remy, I didn't want to just pick things that were relevant to me. I was like a 35-year-old millennial.
Right. What's come? Yeah.
Yeah. So Des, I can't remember if Des just sent this to me, because everybody in the cast was really comfortable with just sending it, like, hey, Rebecca, these are my thoughts. And also very cool when I was like, great, I like this one, but, like, not this one. You know, this one would work for the script, you know. But what was, I hope that they all felt really listened to. And
I mean, at least from my end of it, where I'm hearing 1,000 times.
Yeah. And also, you know, something that was important to me that also made it into the narrative of the show was the idea of centering these autistic voices. And I'm always super happy to talk to do interviews about the show, because I'm super passionate about it and super passionate about the artists I got to work with. But, you know, the same way that, like, Dr. Amigo has to remember that it's not about him and that it needs to be about them. And similarly, like if I can do one and only one thing over the course of this project, is to just, like, cheerlead and shout the praises and do everything I can of the autistic artists that I got to work with. You know, you mentioned, like, we had people hired to help me with the script to make sure that it was authentic, and you got to work with Ava, or you got to speak with Ava. Ava was on so early from this project and really just made sure that in the foundation there was nothing problematic, you know, that I didn't fall into any tropes and stereotypes. And then when Nicole D'Angelo came, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with Nicole. Nicole is,
I think that's happening soon, but I could be wrong.
Good, I hope so. I hope you get to talk to Nicole there.
Whatever it is, there's, you know, I don't know. It's hard to talk about anybody without anyone leaving anyone out at all. But part of it was, you know, having talked to Desmond, Remy, you know, at a certain point, I just cried. It was very emotional. I was crying because I was there. I've never had that good of seats. Whoever hooked that up for me did a good job, because I've never had such good seats in my years of any musical theater. I've never sat that close. I was like, oh. So it's everything. I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you couldn't, like, run down your top 10 cries in musical theater or movies. Maybe you could, but it's not, you know, it's a valid question, but it was everything. Like, keep in mind, I'm also understanding how kind you are being to people, because you're structuring this in a way that is making them as home as possible. And as a special ed teacher, that's going to make me cry on its own. You know, I interviewed people. When I was waiting in line, I'm like, let me talk to people in line. I got nowhere else to do. I interviewed a couple who was so happy that the show was there because of their kid got excited because they saw themselves represented in that. And they're just talking about how they came here today because they wanted to witness this thing because of being autistic parents of autistic kids. So, you know, it's like, I can't look at the show without even thinking about the celebration, what it does, and how I was, I think about camp a lot. I think about certain, you bond certain people, like your cast will never, ever be out of each other's lives, ever. They will not. I'm telling you, they won't. I mean, maybe when they're 90, when they forget about it, but your cast will be best friends for the rest of their lives.
I hope
and
so.
That's a tribute to you and everyone else who did that. And that's, I think that's my big point. It's like, it's, the musical is amazing. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it has everything I love. It was great. But there's a deeper story here of a bunch of people who may not have been treated well in the past came into your space, and you built something beautiful with all of them because you wanted them to be there, and you were happy to be there. And it's a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And I think when I think about it as a teacher, how this is going to ripple in terms of taking seriously the dreams of artistic dreams of kids who might not have been thought of like that before.
Yeah, and again, the story. I always say the story of the show isn't important. Like, it's about the characters, obviously, right? Like, the story is super simple, but built within the story intentionally. And again, like Nicole D'Angelo and Ava Brigal were super helpful in helping me. And Ashley Wool also too, and Imani. I mean, there's so many activists that were within our
team
already, and they brought me into the activism world of autistic culture, which again really affected a lot of the structure and story points too, because I always get very emotional when we get to the second chance dance. Not, I guess, like, yes, in part because of the characters that I love, but because this is the part of the show that's all about self-advocacy.
Yeah.
About like breaking cycles of paternalism, and I know you see this too, but I actually it's always interesting. Like, I think a lot of the audience gets it, but there's a lot of the audience that, you know, they're only seeing sort of one level at the top of the advocacy, and they get the, you know, nothing without us, nothing about us without us. But
yeah,
these things of like, I get very emotional because at the second chance dance, of course, I think about like all the steps that we took to get to the Belasco stage and how proud I am of all of us for persevering against, and not even against the odds, because, you know, because anybody's neurodivergent, but because against the odds, because it's so hard for any musical to get to Broadway. And similarly, that like, whatever that first draft that we came in with, you know, I think of that as the Dr. Migo dance, you know, and how amazing that we all got to do the second chance dance together. It's what you said, like the sort of the form of the space imposed itself on the story structure itself. I don't know if
No.
I'm processing a lot of this stuff too, as I keep watching it, and then I see the audience response, which, the audience response is such an important component to this. I mean, any musical, but this musical too, for those reasons that I think you're trying to parse out too, of like why, what your response was. And like, this is something that I had to get kind of comfortable talking about too, but like, I'm not neurotypical. I have Tourette's
syndrome. Right.
It's something that I've like masked really well for my whole life. And I never would have told my director or my producers, or I would never have gone into a rehearsal room, and I would work extremely hard to not tick, to, you know, just be very normal, you know? And so similarly, like being able to feel comfortable saying like, okay, I might have to explain a little bit about what this is, but I didn't expect to have such a huge shift in learning about going from disordered thinking to neurodivergent models, and, you know, the models of neurodiversity instead. Like, that was a huge education that was so deeply personal to me that I didn't even expect to go through. And I kind of look back and I'm like, oh, Rebecca, why wouldn't you think that like your own neurological disorder would be sort of, that you would have personal development in writing about this subject? But again, like being in that open space was just such a gift. And again, like, I know that other people on our team have other neurodivergences.
Well, I was going to bring it up, but talking to Ava was also in terms of the spectrum, how from her research that it wasn't seen a lot in women because of how it played out differently in boys. than it did with girls. You know, the boys took all of it, apparently.
that's a subject that I'm sure others on our team could speak to much more intelligently than I could.
Yeah.
That was such an interesting part of writing these characters too. And you know, this ensemble show, I think ensemble shows in general are difficult. This one was particularly challenging because there's so much intersectionality.
Right.
In the show, in the autism community, and, you know, like, we barely dipped one pinky toe into the intersectionality and diversity within the autism community.
I mean, you have to breathe and also go to sleep. When you're creating these things, just saying, it makes it easier to wake up the next day if you sleep.
Yeah, there's always more research to do. I always laugh. We had after the show had opened, or like right around, you know, if Nicole D'Angelo was on this interview, they would know exactly what day we got this feedback. But in Unlikely Animals, the platypus. The lyric used to be the platypus is poisonous, and somebody wrote to us and was like, no, the platypus is not poisonous, the platypus is venomous, and there's a difference between the two, and here's what the difference is. And this is what I'm talking to about, like, the feedback. So even though the show was open, we changed that lyric after opening because I wanted it to be correct on the cast album, because I knew that there would be a bunch of fans of this show who would be so annoyed.
Yeah.
I would be annoyed knowing that, you know, the character who cares so much about facts didn't get a fact correctly. I think it's easy for all people to see themselves in the different characters on stage, like including and especially the autistic characters, which I hope is like another perspective shift that people have while watching this show. But like,
would you consider putting on a version of this musical without an autistic, without a full autistic cast? Is that okay or not?
I mean, for me, no. I look, like, I don't think that there are legalities. I don't know what the enforcement around this is. I have an author's note that, like, I very much treat as a living document that addresses casting autistic people, but then also, you know, like, casting Latine actors in Dr. Amigo and Ashley Amigo's roles, and addressing again, like, the intersectionality of queerness within the show, and again, like, I'm not going to be going around to every high school around the country and saying, like, show me your diagnosis.
it's about
honoring the spirit and the ethos.
Yeah.
And again, like, to anyone who is like, well, I don't think there are seven people in my community that could do these roles, I would say, like, first of all, maybe before you just cast somebody who isn't autistic, maybe, like, first of all, get to know the autistic people in your community, whether they're in the drama community also already or not. And then also, like, maybe do some imaginative casting, you know, like, I won't be involved when the show is getting licensed.
Yeah.
You know, I will be involved in casting if we do a tour, or if we do other, you know, commercial versions of versions of this commercial production, the Broadway version. But ultimately, when the show is licensed, again, I will include an author's note with whatever gets licensed. But I won't be able to control. But again, I really think that when people actually get to know the autistic communities where they want, and again, and I assume that if they want to do this show, if they have an interest in it,
as someone who's done, like, theater with kids, autistic teens, I'm like, I'm excited this opens up some other doors. And to be honest, like, you went the opposite way in some ways. You made some of your casting is more multicultural than the original people were.
Sure. And honestly, some of that was just by chance. It was just the people who auditioned for the role. I say some of that was, maybe all of that was by chance. And I think that when we were casting for our swings, we worked with a really wonderful organization called the Harriet Tubman Effect, and we worked with Nicole Johnson, who's the head of our DEI department. And Nicole has really wonderful perspectives, and when we were casting our swings, it was important to us that the swings that we cast to cover the character Remy because Remy in the documentary is in real life is a black man, and we want to honor, you know, we didn't want to
Take
erase
that away.
or like erase any of the real Remy. And so we made that casting choice, and honestly, gosh, I also feel like I learned so much about casting when you're doing that kind of intersectionality. And again, we have some gender nonconforming teammates as well and characters as well. And what I just sort of ultimately repeat to people is like, just look, you know, just people are like, well, you're never gonna find those people. And it's like, actually, like we found, you know, the intersectionality, and we found those people, like, and more than one of them, like enough to cast understudies, and honestly, like more than that too. It's funny because I really think that's my heart on stage, my heart on stage. And I am a pacifist, and I am a diplomat, and I, you know, I'm a person who is happy to apologize when I make mistakes. And I'm not saying that because like I'm so great. But I really appreciate when I see stories that give me good examples of how to do those things. You know what I mean? Like it is practice having humility. There's a lyric in that song Reincarnation. You fall on your face, that's a chance to embrace the humility inside humiliation. I am humiliating myself constantly. And you know, I what you said about like people seeing the show and having an attitude of kindness, gosh, if even like a tiny percentage of the audience took that away with them, then that is enough for me.
In your own writing and creating this, thinking about authenticity of yourself, what are some of the authenticity you're noticing in the other characters? How does that play out in the music? And you know, and what we, I don't know, I don't like, I don't know,
Well,
it's gotta be hard when you're thinking about all these things all together, so I'll keep that simple, but
my gosh, yeah, no. When it comes to authenticity and the script, I think it comes back to what we were saying about honesty. You know, like I think that where the script succeeds or where the show succeeds is when you see that Caroline is so in love with her boyfriend, and you see that she is starting to understand that perhaps he is engaging in toxic behaviors. And yet I think like it is so honest to push against the red flags. You know, like to me, that's where we're like, oh, it's funny because I can relate to that. And I don't know if this goes back to documentary musicals, but like the verisimilitude, you know, I mean, Chorus Line is interviews with dancers, and I often think about that when I talk about like just getting chummy with my teammates. And then again, they weren't formal interviews, but in spending time together, like the essence of who they were as people just informed these characters the way that the dancer interviews informed Chorus Line. And I don't know. I think that we made a show that we liked. And so
Yeah.
that
No,
we
no,
often do.
no. This is
I'm
that's
so
a
happy that
why I'm
other
here as
people.
well.
I know. And it's funny because like the people who didn't like it, I'm always just a little bit like, that's okay, because like I like it a lot.
You know, I try not to get too caught up in the reviews, and the people that didn't like it in the reviews didn't like it for dumb reasons, and they weren't really worth mentioning.
Also, it's art. It's subjective. Like people, and not everybody is going to see themselves on that stage. And you know what? It doesn't feel good, does it? Doesn't feel good to look at
In terms of like, I mean, in terms of writing it, what was that? I mean, was that from the start from those scenes, or think about those scenes in terms of kind of birthing them?
this process was particularly interesting because it was really iterative, and I think of it like this interpretive feedback loop where when Jacob and I first started working with the documentary material, we made this emotional blueprint, and we took all the moments from the documentary that felt really emotional to us. Some that we were like, this feels like it could be a song. Like I think I have a lyric idea, or he's like, musically it would sound like this. And then that first draft, the book, the script was mostly lines pulled directly from the documentary.
Right.
Because I was like, I want to like have the voices of real autistic people in these characters. And then we cast our seven autistic actors in October of 2021, and that's Amelia, Des, Imani, Liam, Ashley, Connor. Who am I forgetting? Oh no! But regardless, but once they stepped into the roles, all of a sudden, we all got really close, and we would just have conversations. And I think I had like one autistic friend. I knew like a couple autistic people before we did this show, and then all of a sudden I had like a dozen new hilarious cool autistic friends.
Yeah.
And so the characters now are really a mixture of the documentary participants and I think the actors that originated the role, which
Well,
makes, sorry, which
you're good.
made
No,
the
keep
role
going.
really
Sorry.
interesting, because again, like this iterative feedback loop where like I would write something and then Des, who plays Remy, would respond to me like, oh, this is how it made me feel. And then I would go, oh, like, well, what you just told me, like some one of line you said really pings for me. I'm gonna bring that thing that feels good for you. I'm gonna bring that
Yeah.
out, and I'm gonna take what you told me, and I'm gonna put that in. And so again, the it wasn't an unusual just like me go into my room and write alone for hours, which there was plenty of that, but the cast and the team and my script consultant Nicole D'Angelo, and like even once we got our tech team, like people on the lighting team who are autistic would be like, hey, I love this lyric and here's why.
Yeah.
And I feel like they also get writing credit. Like it was so much
Well,
contribution.
I think women just do better all this stuff, to be honest. I've seriously,
I'm waiting.
it's very clear that you're, because of being female, it's why you have probably care people that care about you, and that you're able to form a community of people and way you work and design it in a certain way, because that's a female perspective that men don't have.
Well, Rich, I'm going to say I'll yes and you, but I think that
I mean, I'm
like
being a little campy, but you get the gist, right?
no. I think that women are like maybe socially programmed more to do that,
Yeah.
and it's funny though, because my writing partner Jacob is like a very like a gentle, sensitive person who's a great listener, and so but it's interesting like the ways that we are socially conditioned, and like we did have a lot of female leadership on the team.
Yeah.
And, I don't have anything to compare it to really, but I hope that people felt comfortable and they felt like they had leaders who would listen to them and who cared. I do hope that. I think that makes a lot of sense. My partner also works in theater, and we like to talk about how like theater sort of draws in misfits. Like that's
Yeah.
what drew us to theater. We each have our own story about like why we ended up in rehearsals after high school,
Yeah.
instead of some other place. But yeah, I don't know, but it is also, I think a lot, I'm a pretty secular person, and I think that the theater also becomes sort of a sacred space for a lot of people, like whether you're in the audience or on the stage. And
Definitely.
there's certainly like a theater family, and I've been lucky to have like in other shows that I've written, like really wonderful theater families as well. And How to Dance in Ohio sort of felt like an amplified version. We spent so many years developing the show together. And then to make it to the big, beautiful Belasco
Yeah.
stage, like it felt like this big family victory that we all did together. So I get that.
You wrote the book and you wrote the music, correct?
I wrote the lyrics. So you can
The
think I wrote
lyrics. Okay. This is
almost
where my brain always gets confused. Like, okay. I mean,
all the
it's simple, but I'm gonna walk others through it because I get thrown by it. So, but then the person who wrote the lyrics is how does it get broken down, I guess? Because that's
Okay,
what
so
throws me off.
I can totally break this down for you.
Yes.
So Jacob Yandura, who's my collaborator,
Okay.
he wrote the music.
He's
So
all the music. Okay.
all the underscore and the melodies and the chords and all that, he wrote
Okay.
all of that. And then I wrote the lyrics. Like he and I are
Okay.
songwriting partners of 13 years. We've known each other for ages. And we always write songs together. And then I wrote the script for this one too. So I don't
Okay.
always write the book for shows, but for this
Right.
one, This one, and honestly, this one, it made a lot of sense because, you know, there's a lot of interruptions, songs getting interrupted by characters and by book scenes, and so there's kind of a fluidity between the script and the lyrics that I think was it was helpful for me to do both in this
Okay.
one. But I always think I wrote all the words, like I think of it that way. But
Gotcha.
I also have to say, Jacob, the composer, he is really brilliant when it comes to story as well. So we discuss outlines together. We do a lot in the same room. And then I'm always impressed with the way that he underscores a lot of the scenes too.
Gotcha.
I feel like, you know, ours isn't like, here's a song and then here's a scene and then here's a song and here's a scene. The music is often giving you the emotional support underneath the scene. And yeah, he's great with story too.
Why is it that within 2 or 3 minutes of your musical, am I, and this is not to reduce it, and this is not to categorize it, but I feel like I'm watching Rent as written by Sondheim. Did you have it in your mind in creating this at all? Those
You know,
pieces, those people?
well, it's funny that you say Rent and Sondheim, because I think I more had come the score of Company in my head, and it's funny, I have to think about like how much interstitial musical material we cut out
Okay.
in the last year. But for me, there's always a little bit more, especially in the hello, how are you? Thanks, I'm fine. Like for me, that's always a little bit of the like Bobby Baby Booby.
Tell me about where this is coming from. Where are you
Well, and then,
musically?
Rich, let me ask you a couple questions in response
Oh
to
yeah.
that. Are you like when you say that you hear Rent, do you mean like the structure of the story in terms of like the
No.
ensemble of beautiful people, or you mean like
I mean,
literal melody lines?
I said that wrong. I feel Rent and I feel Sondheim through your musical in the best possible way. So it's not even that I hear it, I feel it. There's a sense, there's something in, I mean, I don't know if that has to do with, you know, you creating an ensemble piece. I feel like when you do that well, it's going to always have, you know, a certain vibe of action. You never want to, I think about this as a director. You never want to bring a kid in and have him do like three lines and then that's it. You want to try to, you know, you want to have a play that can put, he can have more, you don't get a lot of lead characters in musical theater sometimes.
Well, Rich, I will say it was important to me that every actor in How to Dance in Ohio have a great track that they would love to perform. And
Yeah.
part of that was because I fell so deeply in love with our entire cast and I just want to make them happy.
Right.
But also I like for future people to perform. I'm you know, like in each of the parent tracks, you know, it's they don't get as much stage time as the group members. But I really wanted to make sure that everybody had something beautiful to sing or like a very impactful emotional scene. And you know, I've talked with a couple of the actors and you know, they've expressed that like they've never gotten to do scene work. You know, some of the
Yeah.
actors are parents and they have like these, you know, nice lengthy dramatic scene moments. And you know, maybe I think the rent feeling you might be getting, I will give that credit to the cast because I think with so many debuts, but also there are so many incredible leaders in our cast. That's the thing I
Yeah.
can't quite understand is how with so many new people, how there are so many great leaders amongst our group members. And I
And
think
just,
you can
yeah.
tell in interviews. I mean, like, and Rich, I think the reason the show is successful and the reason that people are having such a personal connection to it. I think there's so much joy on stage, and the joy on stage is really a reflection of sort of the joy in the rehearsal room. I can certainly say like it was a joy to write this show. Like every step, even of course there are grumbly writer block moments, but
Course.
every development step of this was wonderful. Every person who came into the orbit of How to Dance in Ohio was a wonderful person. And then on top of that, I don't know. I think that people feel that joy and it's a feedback loop of the rehearsal process. Does that make sense? Like what
Yeah.
you're talking about having that new rehearsal
No. Believe me, I 100%. Yeah. No. I've told yes.
you know, so I just want to say as many times on as many podcasts that, you know, it was not to the detriment of the process and the
Oh
work
no.
to make these accommodations. And the accommodations were helpful for every member of the team, regardless of their neurotype. And that, again, it infused the process with like joy and a sense of compassion. Yeah, well, we definitely, first of all, like the artists that we got to work with are super, super talented. And so I think we all worked together and we saw not even just like, you know, noticing what everyone's different strengths are. And like Imani Russell is such a profoundly gifted dramatic actor.
Yeah.
I cannot believe how lucky we are to work with them. And that sort of gave me a challenge of, you know what, I think of myself as someone who writes, you know, poetic lyrics and I like writing comedy. And I thought, well, I'm going to challenge myself to write, you know, some heft, you know, to let Imani shine in those moments.
Yeah.
So I kind of laughed at Imani about like, you know, Imani was my muse in that sense. And like everybody in this cast sort of inspired me with their talents to challenge myself to support them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think a lot of personal and professional growth in this. And I feel like my professional growth in getting to write for those voices was immense.
What was the moment where you're like, oh, this, when did you know this was going to be a musical?
Oh, you know, such an interesting question, because my writing partner, Jacob, is the one who found the documentary.
Okay.
And he really spearheaded the genesis of it. He wrote me that night and he had like made a 3-page document. This is like Jacob doesn't just like say, here's a melody. Like he is like hunting for stories about like deep emotional connection. And that's what the documentary was for him. And so he asked me to watch it right away and I agreed. But you know, my concern about the show was, you know, that we didn't want it to be a little like cream puff piece of inspiration, which is interesting because that was honestly my biggest fear working on it. And I'm sure you know like Hal Prince was the original director of the show. And the thing that made me feel like, oh, I can write this, is in our very first meeting, Hal was like, it can't be saccharine. And I know that there's a lot of joy in our show and it's, you know, but you know, with the very first outline that we did with Hal, he was like, this isn't a sweet show. This is an honest show. And that's actually what I think the show is so affecting, is that like, you know, you're not saying a joke, like you're saying just, it's honest. The characters are honest.
The environment you created for them opened that up. It's more than just, I mean, there's some talented people, but having the intelligence to know how to treat people and how to organize them and how to have them work together is the pieces that usually killed all of this.
But that's the honesty part too, right? Like you can't do honest work as an artist. And the thing I mentioned about that creative feedback loop, like if the producers and our team hadn't taken such great care.
Oh yeah.
To say like, hey, this is an environment that is meant for all of us. You're welcome here. And then if our autistic artists in turn hadn't said, hey, here's some feedback about how we could feel even more welcome here. You know, like that honesty going, and then again, like honesty and character too, of like, hey, I don't think my character would do this. I think my character, you know, might love this instead. Even, you know, when we were building the cosplay references for the character of Remy, I didn't want to just pick things that were relevant to me. I was like a 35-year-old millennial. So Dez, I can't remember if Dez just sent this to me, because everybody in the cast was really comfortable with just sending it, like, hey Rebecca, these are my thoughts. And also very cool when I was like, great, I like this one, but like not this one. You know, this would work for the script, you know. But what was, I hope that they all felt really listened to. And
at least from my end of it, where I'm hearing 1,000 times.
Yeah. And also, you know, something that was important to me that also made it into the narrative of the show was the idea of centering these autistic voices. And I'm always super happy to talk to talk and to do interviews about the show because I'm super passionate about it and super passionate about the artists I got to work with. But, you know, the same way that like Dr. Amigo has to remember that it's not about him and that it needs to be about them. And similarly, like if I can do one and only one thing over the course of this project is to just like cheerlead and shout the praises and do everything I can of the autistic artists that I got to work with. You know, you mentioned like we had people hired to help me with the script to make sure that it was authentic, and you got to work with Ava, or you got to speak with Ava. Ava was on so early from this project and really just made sure that in the foundation there was nothing problematic, you know, that I didn't fall into any tropes and stereotypes. And then when Nicole D'Angelo came, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with Nicole. Nicole is,
I think that's happening soon, but I could be wrong.
I hope so. I hope you get to talk to Nicole there.
Whatever it is, there's, you know, I don't know. It's hard to talk about anybody without anyone leaving anyone out at all. But part of it was, you know, having talked to, Desmond, Remy, you know, there's a certain point, I just cried. It was very emotional. I was crying because I was there. I've never had that good of seats. Whoever hooked that up for me did a good job, because I've never had such good seats in my years of any musical theater. I've never sat that close. I was like, oh, so it's everything. I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you couldn't like run down your top 10 cries in musical theater or movies. Maybe you could, but it's not, you know, it's a valid question, but it was everything. Like, keep in mind, I'm also understanding how kind you are being to people, because you're structuring this in a way that is making them as home as possible. And as a special ed teacher, that's going to make me cry on its own. You know, I interviewed people. When I was waiting in line, I'm like, let me talk to people in line. I got no one else to do. I interviewed a couple who was so happy that the show was there because of their kid got excited because they saw themselves represented in that. And they're just talking about how they came here today because they wanted to witness this thing because of being autistic parents of an autistic kid. So, you know, it's like I can't look at the show without even thinking about the celebration, what it does in how I was. I think about camp a lot. I think about you bond certain people. Like, your cast will never, ever be out of each other's lives, ever. They will not. I'm telling you, they won't. I mean, maybe when they're 90, when they forget about it, but your cast will be best friends for the rest of their lives.
I hope
and
so.
That's a tribute to you and everyone else who did that. And I think that's my big point. It's like, the musical is amazing. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it has everything I love. It was great. But there's a deeper story here of bunch of people who may not have been treated well in the past came into your space, and you built something beautiful with all of them because you wanted them to be there and you were happy to be there. And it's a bigger thing.
Yeah.
And I think when I think about it as a teacher, how this is going to ripple in terms of taking seriously the dreams of the artistic dreams of kids who might not have been thought of like that before.
Yeah, and again, like, again, the story, I always say the story of the show isn't important. Like, it's about the characters, obviously, right? Like, the story is super simple, but built within the story intentionally. And again, like, Nicole D'Angelo and Ava Brigalhelp were super helpful in helping me, and Ashley Wool also too, and Imani. I mean, there's so many activists that were within
our team
already, and they brought me into the activism world of autistic culture, which again really affected a lot of the structure and story points too, because I always get very emotional when we get to the second chance dance. Yes, in part because of the characters that I love, but because this is the part of the show that's all about self-advocacy.
Yeah.
About like breaking cycles of paternalism, and I know you see this too, but I actually it's always interesting. Like, I think a lot of the audience gets it, but there's a lot of the audience that, you know, they're only seeing sort of one level at the top of the advocacy, and they get the, you know, nothing about us without us. But
yeah,
these things of like, I get very emotional because at the second chance dance, of course, I think about like all the steps that we took to get to the Belasco stage and how proud I am of all of us for persevering against, and not even against the odds, because, you know, because anybody's neurodivergent, but because of, against the odds, because it's so hard for any musical to get to Broadway. And similarly, that like, whatever that first draft that we came in with, you know, I think of that as the Dr. Migo dance, you
right.
know, and how amazing that we all got to do the second chance dance together. It's what you said, like the sort of the form of the space imposed itself on the story structure itself. I don't know if
yeah.
that's
No.
I'm processing a lot of this stuff too as I keep watching it, and then I see the audience response, which the audience response is such an important component to this. I mean, any musical, but this musical too, for those reasons that I think you're trying to parse out too, of like why, what your response was. And like, this is something that I had to get kind of comfortable talking about too, but like, I'm not neurotypical. I have Tourette's syndrome.
Right.
It's something that I've like masked really well for my whole life. And I never would have told my director or my producers,
right.
or I would never have gone into a rehearsal room, and I would work extremely hard to not tick, to, you know, just be very normal, you know? And so similarly, like being able to feel comfortable saying like, okay, I might have to explain a little bit about what this is, but I didn't expect to have such a huge shift in learning about going from disordered thinking to neurodivergent models, and you know, the models of neurodiversity instead. Like, that was a huge education that was so deeply personal to me that I didn't even expect to go through. And I kind of look back and I'm like, oh, Rebecca, why wouldn't you think that like your own neurological disorder would be sort of, that you would have personal development in writing about this subject? But again, like being in that open space was just such a gift. And again, like I know that other people on our team have other neurodivergences.
Well, I was going to bring it up with talking to Ava, was also in terms of the spectrum, how from her research that it wasn't seen a lot in women because of how it played out differently in boys than it did with girls. You know, the boys took all of it, apparently.
that's a subject that I'm sure others on our team could speak to much more intelligently than I could.
Yeah.
That was such an interesting part of writing these characters too. And you know, this ensemble show, I think ensemble shows in general are difficult. This one was particularly challenging because there's so much intersectionality.
Right.
In the show, in the autism community, and, you know, like we barely dipped one pinky toe into the intersectionality and diversity within the autism community.
I mean, you have to breathe and also go to sleep. When you're creating these things, just saying, it makes it easier to wake up the next day if you sleep.
Yeah, there's always more research to do. I always laugh. We had after the show had opened, or like right around, you know, if Nicole D'Angelo was on this interview, they would know exactly what day we got this feedback. But in Unlikely Animals, the platypus. The lyric used to be "the platypus is poisonous," and somebody wrote to us and was like, "No, the platypus is not poisonous. The platypus is venomous, and there's a difference between the two. And here's what the difference is." And this is what I'm talking to about, like the feedback. So even though the show was open, we changed that lyric after opening because I wanted it to be correct on the cast album, because I knew that there would be a bunch of fans of this show who would be so annoyed.
Yeah,
I would be annoyed knowing that the character who cares so much about facts didn't get a fact. I think it's easy for all people to see themselves in the different characters on stage, like including and especially the autistic characters, which I hope is like another perspective shift that people have while watching this show. But like,
would you consider putting on a version of this musical without an autistic, without a full autistic cast? Is that okay or not?
I mean, for me, no. And look, like I don't think that there are legalities. I don't know what the enforcement around this is. I have an author's note that like I very much treat as a living document that
Yeah.
addresses like casting autistic people, but then also like casting Latine actors in Dr. Amigo and Ashley Amigo's roles,
Right. There's it's not it's
and like addressing again like the intersectionality of queerness within the show, and again like I'm not going to be going around to every high school around the
Right.
country and saying like, show me your diagnosis. But
Well, it's just it's
it's about honoring the spirit and the ethos of
Yeah.
these. And again, like to anyone who is like, well, I don't think there are seven people in my community that could do these roles, I would say like, first of all, maybe before you just cast somebody who isn't autistic, maybe like first of all, get to know the autistic people in your community,
Yeah.
whether they're in the drama community also already or not. And then also like maybe do some imaginative casting. You know, like I won't be involved when the show is getting licensed,
Yeah.
you know, I will be involved in casting if we do a tour or if we do other, you know, commercial versions of the like or versions of this commercial production, the Broadway version. But ultimately, when the show is licensed, again, I will include an author's note with whatever gets licensed. That, but I won't be able to control. But again,
Well,
I really think that when people actually get to know the autistic communities where they want, and again, and I assume that if they want to do this show, if they have an interest in it.
as someone who's done like theater with kids, autistic teens, I'm like I'm excited this opens up some other doors. And to be honest, like you, I mean, you went the opposite way in some ways. You made some of your casting is more multicultural than the original people were.
Sure, and honestly, some of that was just by chance.
Yeah.
It was just the people who auditioned for the role. I mean, I say some of that was, I maybe all of that was by chance. And I think that when we were casting for our swings, we worked with a really wonderful organization called the Harriet Tubman Effect, and we worked with
Okay.
Nicole Johnson, who's the head of our DEI department. And Nicole has really wonderful perspectives, and when we were casting our swings, it was important to us that the swings that we cast to cover the character Remy, because Remy in the documentary is in real life is a Black man, and we
Yeah.
wanted to honor, you know, we didn't want to
Take
erase
that away.
or like erase any of the real Remy, and so we made that casting choice, and honestly. Gosh, I also feel like I learned so much about, casting when you're doing that kind of intersectionality. And again, we have some gender nonconforming teammates as well and characters as well. And what I just sort of ultimately repeat to people is like, just look, you know, just people are like, well, you're never
Yeah.
gonna find those people. And it's like, actually, like we found, you know, the intersectionality, and we found those people like, and more than one of them, like enough to cast understudies, and honestly, like more than that too. It's funny because I really think that like, that's my heart on stage, my heart on stage. And I am a pacifist, and I am a diplomat, and I, you know, I'm a person who is happy to apologize when I make mistakes, and
Yeah.
I'm not saying that because like I'm so great, but I really appreciate when I see stories that give me good examples of how to do those things. You know what I mean? Like it is practice having humility. There's a lyric in that song Reincarnation. You fall on your face. That's a chance to embrace the humility inside humiliation. I am humiliating myself
Yeah.
constantly. And you know, I what you said about like people seeing the show and having an attitude of kindness, gosh, if even like a tiny percentage of the audience took that away with them, then that is enough for me.
In your own writing and creating this, thinking about authenticity of yourself, what are some of the authenticity you're noticing in the other characters? How does that play out in the music? And what we, I don't know, I don't like, I don't know,
Well,
it's gotta be, it's gotta be hard when you're thinking about all these things all together. So I'll keep that simple, but
my gosh. Yeah. No. when it comes to authenticity in the script, I think it comes back to what we were saying about honesty. You know, like I think that where the script succeeds or where the show succeeds is when you see that Caroline is so in love with her boyfriend, and you see that she is starting to understand that perhaps he is engaging in toxic behaviors. And yet I think like it is so honest to push against the red flags. You know, like I to me that's where we're like, oh, it's funny because I can relate to that. And I don't know if this goes back to documentary musicals, but like the verisimilitude, you know, I mean, Chorus Line is interviews with dancers, and I often think about that when I talk about like just getting chummy with my teammates, and then again they weren't formal interviews, but in spending time together, like the essence of who they were as people just informed these characters the way that the dancer interviews informed Chorus Line. And I don't know. I think also, I think that we made a show that we liked.
No, no, no.
I'm
That's
so
a,
happy that
why I'm
other
here as
people.
well.
I know, and it's funny because like the people who didn't like it, I'm always just a little bit like, that's okay, because like I like it a lot.
I try not to get too caught up in the reviews, and the people that didn't like it in the reviews, they didn't like it for dumb reasons, and they weren't really worth mentioning.
Also, it's art. It's subjective. Like people, and not everybody is going to see themselves on that stage. And you know what? It doesn't feel good, does it? Doesn't feel good.
Thank you so much for checking this out. Again, if you check out our page, Vintage Annals Archive, we have a Building Momentum page, which has more information on the show and everyone involved that was part of the podcast. Again, please share as much as you can. I do this really for the love. I don't really make any money at this, and I do spend money, and I'm happy to do that. But any sharing of our podcast can be really helpful. And again, make sure to check out upcoming episodes. We'll have about 6 or so uploaded by February 12th, and then another 3 or 4 over the week, and then we're adding a few more. But most of these will be out by mid, I would say by the 3rd week of February, and then depending on what happens next, we'll be documenting more and more of it. And again, one more or less thank you to Sammy Kenold, the director, really went out of their way to help me out with this process, as well as Raymond Esposito, one of the producers, really helped me out. This was my first really attempt to document interview people on an active musical, and it's very different from working in film or music. It's a whole different process, and those folks really were helpful and helped me figure it out. And also thank you to Arthur Castro, my editor, who stepped this game up. Once we found that it was being closed, I really wanted to have this stuff out by around the time it closed, because I wanted people to understand what everybody went through and how important it was. And I want to thank again all our guests who spent time with me. It was a pleasure meeting all of them. So again, thank you. Take care.
We thought indifferent.